Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. I'm your host, Henrik Palmgren. We are recording from the west coast of Sweden, and we are here with a new program every Thursday and Sunday, covering fascinating subjects with interesting guests. Our website is redicecreations.com. Highly recommended that you visit often. Our news section is updated frequently, and we have a lot of links and resources to fascinating material there for you. We also have our free radio archive up there for you with radio programs going back to our start over a year ago. We also have our subscriber section for those of you who want to dive even deeper into the subjects we cover and get the full story, as it were. You'll find all the details on redicecreations.com. Today we have an interesting guest with us on the line. Author and lecturer Greg Braden is with us, and Greg is internationally renowned as a pioneer in bridging science and spirituality. And Greg's work shows beyond any reasonable doubt that we have the power to reverse disease, redefine aging, and even change reality itself by embracing the focused power of human emotion as the quantum language of change. And Greg Braden is the author to The ICI Effect, The God Code, and his newest book is The Divine Matrix, Bridging Time, Space, Miracles, and Belief. And by the way, Greg's website, in case you want to follow along during our talk here today, is gregbraden.com. So head on over there and take a look. And we have a lot to cover here today, and we have a little bit of time here. So let's say hello to our guest. Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio, Greg. Thank you for coming on.
Well, Henrik, it's a pleasure to hear your voice. I'm absolutely thrilled to be on your program today, and I want to thank you for the kind words in our introduction and for all the work you're doing in your part of the world to bring this information to your listeners. I mean, thank you very much.
Thank you, thank you. It's a pleasure to have you here, and I know that you're on a busy schedule, and I really appreciate you taking the time. There's much to talk about. You know, your books and research cover many areas, and I'd love to talk about your latest book, of course, the Divine Matrix, Bridging Time, Space, Miracles, and Belief. But before we dive into that, maybe we could spend a little bit of time just talking a little bit about your background in this field and kind of what directed you into this area to begin with.
Well, certainly. You know, it's interesting when people see my background. I was trained in the hard sciences. My degrees are in the earth sciences, and I've studied the ocean sciences and computer science, mathematics, physics, biology. And people ask how I made what they consider to be the leap from those kinds of studies into the spirituality that we'll talk about today. And I think when I first heard the question, I was a little surprised, because to me it didn't seem like a leap. It always seemed like a logical progression. Even as a child, I never made the separation between science and spirituality. I've always believed that when we study science, when we study the world around us, what we're doing is understanding how that world works and our relationship to that world, and ultimately that leads us to an understanding of our relationship to a greater existence, to a higher power. Mm-hmm. So I always believed that, and I just thought everyone else believed the same. And it wasn't until I was in the corporations that I found nothing could be further from the truth, that, that people believed you either follow the path of science or you follow the path of spirituality, but somehow the two are mutually exclusive. They are not compatible. So in the last years of the Cold War, during the late 1980s, I found myself working in the defense industry for a company called Martin Marietta Aerospace and Defense. Today it's called Lockheed Martin.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it was a frightening time in the history of our world, as I'm sure your listeners remember. The Cold War was one of the most frightening wars in the history of our planet. Although it didn't have the visibility that Iraq or Vietnam or something like that may have had, the consequences of where the Cold War could have been were absolutely chilling, because the superpowers were willing to use nuclear weapons as a threat against one another in a way that had never been done before. And it was during that time, I was working in that industry on the one hand, and on the other hand, I've always believed that there is a principle in our past that tells us that we're a family and that tells us that we're more than the differences that lead to the wars. And if we could ever find that principle, Henrik, my feeling was maybe we wouldn't have the kinds of wars we'd had in the past.
Hmm.
And that, for me, was a big turning point of marrying the holistic and the spiritual principles with the best science of our time, and looking for a way to apply that, the combination of those things into something that would help us to avoid the kinds of wars that we've seen in the 20th century, and to recognize that we're a family. So it was a logical progression more than a great awakening, but it was the Cold War and my role in the defense industry during the Cold War that really pointed me to the direction of bringing the spiritual principles into our awareness with a scientific background so that we can know that they're real. And
interesting.
That's a long answer to a short question.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Lays the foundation for other things that we'll talk about in this hour.
Definitely, and that's fascinating. And you know, considering your background in science and technology, then I mean, we're, you know, right now, you know, moving at tremendous speed into, you know, our technological progress is incredible, and we have, you know, I don't know if we should call it a threat or not, but we have kind of the, you know, the nanobots future coming, uncontrollable singularities to particle accelerators, you know, tapping into other dimensions, and potentially even out of control AI systems coming in. I mean, is this something we should be concerned about? Is this troublesome, or is this simply the signs of a new opportunity that's opening up for the human race?
Well, I think they're both, and everything that you said is true. All of those things are happening. Personally, I have to begin my answer by saying that I'm an optimistic person. I believe that we're here on purpose. I believe humankind is no accident of biology, no fluke of nature, that we're an intentional species. And while we're still understanding where we came from and how we got here, I know that we're no accident.
Mm.
And because of that, I believe that we're here for much more than simply to destroy ourselves. I think there's something much deeper that is happening here.
Mm-hmm.
A number of conferences have been held over the last few years, bringing together the best minds of our time with the question, where are we headed right now?
Mm-hmm.
And in 2005, the publication Scientific American carried the proceeds of one of those conferences. In a special edition, it was called Crossroads Planet Earth,
mm-hmm.
and it identified a number of different scenarios that are happening, some of them you've just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It identified a number of scenarios. Any one of these scenarios, if it were to go to completion, would bring an end to our world as we know it, whether mm-hmm. we're talking about abrupt climate change or a global virus disease that we have no antidote for, or whether we're talking about the possibility of a third world war. All of these things were being considered. And what the experts said is that we are accelerating to a time that they call the bottleneck in human history, when our resources are stretched, when our ability to solve the problems using old ways of thinking are stretched to the maximum.
Mm-hmm.
And what all of these scientists said, Henrik, and this is what's so exciting, they all said that there's a beautiful future for humanity on the horizon, that there's a time where we've outgrown the habit of war, for example,
mm-hmm.
That we've outgrown our susceptibility to disease, and natural disasters. All of those things are on the horizon. But what they said is that we must find a way to get through the next 8 to 10 years before we have that beautiful future.
Hmm.
That we've got to find a way to solve the problems of energy, of war, based on our belief systems, the diseases, the climate changes that we're looking at now.
Yeah.
And this is what brings us right back into this conversation that you and I are having today, because they said to solve these problems, We've got to look at them through new eyes. We've got to look at them in a way that we've never looked at them before, because the tools that we've always used to solve our problems in the past simply are not working. So we need new tools based on new understandings that come from a new way of looking at our world. And for me, this is why our newest book, The Divine Matrix, it's such a powerful book, because it's taking an old idea, the idea that everything is connected. That's a very ancient idea. But it's taking that idea through the eyes of what modern science now has discovered, some of the discoveries only within the last couple of years, and it's bringing that information to the general public in a way that everyone can understand and in a way that everyone can use, and it means that everyone has a voice. We have a vote in how we solve these problems. It's not left to just a handful of leaders in a couple of nations. And I think that's what makes this time so exciting, and that's why I am so optimistic about this time.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds very good. I mean, let's kind of go to the heart of the matter, I guess. I mean, the divine matrix. What is that? Tell us about it.
Well, the divine matrix, it was very healing for me to write this book. It's the result of over 22 years of research and my presentations that I've shared with audiences all over the world. It's based in the scientific fact. And it is now a fact that there is a field of energy that bathes all of the universe, as far as scientists know, that permeates all of creation, a field of energy that connects everything in ways now that we're only beginning to understand. And this is, it's so interesting to me, because modern science is only now arriving at this understanding. On the one hand, and on the other hand, this is the place where the ancient spiritual traditions, some of them 5, 6, 7, 8,000 years old, this is the place where they begin. So people ask me, they say, well, you know, Greg, why would you spend your time going into the ancient temples and spending so much time in the remote monasteries in Tibet and Egypt and in Bolivia and Peru? And this is the answer to that question, because there's a knowledge that's held in those ancient cultures that we and the Western traditions lost around 300 years ago with the birth of science. So from my perspective as a scientist, I'm thinking that if we're facing these great challenges and the way that we look at the world doesn't give us the tools to solve them, what would happen if we take the best science that we have today and we marry that, we merge it with the best wisdom of our spiritual past? What if we marry those two different ways of knowing into a greater wisdom? Where will that lead us? And this is what this divine matrix now is beginning to show, is that there is this field of energy that connects everything. It's the field of energy where our healing begins, where peace begins, where our abundance, our material and our spiritual abundance, where it begins, where the success of our careers begin, the success of our relationships. It all happens in this field of energy before it ever becomes real in our world. So that understanding, scientists now accept the fact that this field is there. So it's not a theory, it's not a metaphor, and it's not a New Age thought. It is a scientific fact. But what the scientists are now asking is, how do we use this field? What does it mean in our lives? And this is where we go back into the ancient traditions that have known about this field for thousands of years, and they tell us how that we can apply this in our lives. They say, yes, not only does the field exist, they say, here's how you use it in your life, and this is where the great spiritual traditions have been born. And later, religions came along and kind of wrapped themselves around these traditions. But if we can go to the heart, go to the core of those great spiritual teachings, we're given the instructions that tell us how we can communicate with this field of energy to create healing in our bodies, healing in our families, peace between nations, and cooperation in the family of humankind. And I think that is worthwhile to explore.
Yeah, definitely. And so in a way, we're kind of approaching or coming to kind of a full circle here, I guess. And with this, again, science as a tool, we are rediscovering that fact, I guess.
Well, Henrik, it's interesting that you use that language, because that is precisely the language that I use as well. I want to make myself very clear. I was trained as a scientist, and I believe that science is good, and we've benefited from science. It has served us, and it's given us things and experiences that we would never have without the science. What has happened, in my opinion, is that now we're pushing the limits of the science, and we're doing so without the spirituality that gives meaning to that science.
Yeah.
And I think that the science can become empty, if I can use that term.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It loses its heart and the respect and the honoring of life until we bring back the spiritual principles that tell us that we're part of everything. Those spiritual principles tell us that we're part of all life, that we're part of one another, that life is precious. And that's something that it's hard for science to really tell us, because what science does, science tells us how things work. It tells us about the mechanism, the nuts and the bolts of why things work. But science doesn't always tell us how to apply those understandings in our lives.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Spiritual understandings are not technical, but they tell us, because we're all connected, here is what that connection means, and here's how you use it in your life. And to me, it's not that the two are incompatible, it's that the two must be in place. The two are necessary. They require one another for us to have a complete understanding of this universe and of ourselves, our role. Who are we in the world, and what are our true capabilities? What are our true responsibilities? And I think that comes from our understanding when we marry the spirituality with the science, when we marry how things work with how to use those understandings in our lives, then it brings us full circle. And we have all the information we need to make decisions about our future. And I think this is one of the reasons why it's so difficult for people now to make many of the decisions, is because we simply don't have all the information. We're not told that we're part of the rocks and the trees and the air and the earth. I mean, you know, some people know that, but it's not general mainstream thinking.
That's right.
And we're not told that we have a language within each of us that communicates with this field of energy to create the effects in our lives and in our world that bring joy to our hearts. We're not told that we have the language to communicate with this field of energy. This is some of the information that was lost in the Western Judeo-Christian traditions. On the one hand, on the other hand, it was not lost in many of the ancient and indigenous traditions, and this is why I think it's valuable to go into these remote, isolated villages and the pristine monasteries of Tibet and Bolivia and Peru and the mountains of Egypt, because there is a knowledge that's been preserved in their culture that was lost in our culture. For a number of different reasons, we can talk about those if we choose.
Mm-hmm.
But when we bring that lost knowledge back and marry it with the science, this is where we begin to have a fresh new understanding of our universe and our world.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, it doesn't look like such a scary place, because it tells us that we are in direct communication with our world, and when we know this language, we can create the effects of healing and peace, but first we must learn the language, and that's the language based in our hearts, human feeling, human emotion, and the power of true belief, which is different than the things that we think or wish or hope will come true in our lives. There's a big difference there.
Mm. So there are many areas to go into here. The one, of course, the feel that you mentioned, I guess that this goes right into the area of quantum physics, if I understand things correctly.
Absolutely. This the field that we're talking about, Henrik, it's such a new field that scientists have yet to agree upon one name for this field. So if you do a Google search on the internet, or you read the scientific books, some scientists simply call this the field. There's actually a book by a woman named Lynn McTaggart. It's called The Field. It's
We had Lynn on the program, so yeah, definitely.
I actually do conferences, and I'll be presenting with her. I think we'll be in Hamburg in June of next year. We'll be there for a conference.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting.
You know, but maybe I'm not supposed to say that yet. I don't know.
Okay.
But this, so some people simply call this the field. Stephen Hawking, the physicist, calls it the mind of God. The former Apollo astronaut, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, calls it nature's mind.
Mm.
The father of quantum theory, Max Planck, called it the matrix, and now we're calling it the divine matrix, and there are other names. They're all different names for the same field of energy. It is a quantum essence, a quantum a field of energy that works differently than typical energy that we would expect to measure with our equipment. And this is one of the reasons why it's taken so long for scientists to validate this field, is because it doesn't behave the way a radio wave would behave, or a television, a broadcast wave. So now that we understand how the field works, there, scientists are building equipment that can measure the field, and we know that it's there. But it is, this field is, it's the energy that precedes everything our world is made of. So it's the energy that becomes the atoms of our physical reality. And what's so interesting is that the experiments are showing that human emotion directly communicates with this energy. So when we create the feeling in our hearts as if, and this is the great secret that was preserved in these ancient cultures, when we can feel as if our heart's desire has already happened, when we can feel as if our prayer is already answered, when we can feel as if the healing of our loved ones has already happened, or the peace between nations is already there, these are the feelings that communicate directly with this field of energy, and the field of energy will conform to those feelings. In other words, we must feel the outcome as if it's already happened, so that this field can mirror that back to us in our reality.
Mm.
And this is a very different way for the Western mind to think about our world and how it works. But
that's
it's
right.
Also precisely the way that many of the indigenous traditions have always believed and have always felt. And now the science is beginning to help us understand why that makes sense.
That's right. And just as you say, the achievement of, you know, is going out there and get it, or making it, or building it, or whatever it might be. But as you say, this is totally different. And I mean, is this then the language that you mentioned earlier? Is this what that is?
It's a language that has no words, Henrik. It's the language of human emotion. The language of us feeling in our hearts, not just thinking in our minds. This is where many people get stuck. They say if they think positive, or if they do the affirmation, if they say, you know, my loved ones are healed right now, if they say that enough times, that it's actually going to happen. And the thoughts are important. They are important. But the secret that was lost in the Western traditions in the 4th century A.D., 1,700 years ago, this is the information that was taken out of the biblical texts in the Judeo-Christian tradition, when those books were edited in the 4th century, we know that 45 books were edited that would become our Western biblical tradition. 45 books, 20 of those books were removed completely. Another 25 were edited, condensed, and rearranged. And we know that this happened because when we found the Dead Sea Scrolls, for example, we began finding some of the original documents. And when we found the Nag Hammadi Library in Egypt, 1947, we began to find some of the original documents for the New Testament texts. And when they were compared against the version that we have today, what we could see is that our modern Bible is good. It's a good document. It simply is incomplete. And when we went back into those original documents, we were able to find the pieces that were left out and the pieces that were missing. And what's so interesting is those are the very pieces that tell us of the power of human emotion and belief in our hearts to change our world. And that's what was lost in the Judeo-Christian tradition. On the one hand, and on the other hand, it was never lost in the ancient Tibetan Buddhist traditions. It was never lost in the Aboriginal traditions or in the Native American traditions of North America or in the Hindu traditions of the Vedas that go back over 8,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Those other traditions didn't undergo the editing process that our Judeo-Christian texts have undergone. So, and I'm not saying that one is right, wrong, good, or bad. I'm saying that there's information that all of those traditions contain. And when we marry them all together with the best science of our time, it empowers us to participate, to be part of what happens in our world rather than feeling powerless as if things happen for no reason and we can't do anything about them. So the language that we're talking about that's described in these texts is the language, it's called the language of the heart. It is the power of us humans to feel in our hearts, to feel and give gratitude and appreciation and thanks as if the outcome of our prayer has already happened. And again, I know this is a very different way for many people to think about the way our world works. For other people, it's very much aligned with what they've always believed. But what the experiments are showing is that when we can create the feeling in our heart as if something has already happened, it sets into motion physical principles that will allow that feeling and that that outcome to actually occur in our lives. So when we feel in our hearts that the healing in our bodies, for example, has already happened, what that feeling does is it sends a signal to our brain, and our brain releases the chemistry in our bodies that allows that feeling, allows the healing to take place. So it's when we feel appreciation and gratitude for the health and vitality of our bodies that we send the signal to our brain, and the brain releases the hormones. The brain enhances our immune system. The brain sends the right chemistry in our blood to all of our cells to make that that healing actually happen inside of our bodies. Now, what the science is showing is that the same thing happens beyond our bodies. When we feel that feeling in our heart, what we're actually doing is creating an electrical field and a magnetic field in our heart that is much stronger than the electrical and the magnetic field in our brain. And this is why the feeling in our heart is more powerful than the thought in the brain. And when we create those electrical and magnetic fields in our hearts, they aren't limited to our bodies. They extend beyond our bodies into the world around us. And they begin to literally change the atoms of our world. They rearrange the stuff our world is made of. because the atoms of our world are made of electrical and magnetic information.
Yeah.
So the strong, our heart is over 5,000 times stronger with a magnetic field than our brain. Our heart is over 100 times stronger with an electrical field than our brain. So when we can feel those feelings, what we call feelings, what we're actually doing is creating the waves of electrical and magnetic information in our heart that extend into the world. And as we learn to hone this language, to speak this language of the heart really well, as the great masters of our past have shown us, that's when we learn to affect the world around us as well as the world within our bodies.
Mm.
And you don't have to know any science or anything technical to do it. All we are invited to do is to use the power of human belief and human emotion and create the feelings from the outcome as if our heart's desire has already happened. And I know that's a lot of information in a short period of time, but I wanted just to pull all that together so that we can talk about it now for the rest of the program.
Definitely. Wonderful. Definitely. And you know, just to make, a comparison here, much like gravity in a way, even though we might not be able to explain it or understand it fully, yet there it is and actually affects us. And I guess that this works in a similar way, meaning that, you know, the obvious question is, well, how can, you know, emotion make the universe to begin to, you know, work in our favor or whatever? But this is just a law, I guess, of the universe, the law of attraction, I guess.
Well, this is where this divine matrix comes in. When the question, because this field, this quantum field, bathes everything. It connects everything. It's not out there somewhere. It's running through our bodies right now. And this field is a field of potential energy that can become anything, and it looks to the feelings in our hearts to as the blueprints. You can think of it this way. We're creating the blueprint through the way we feel in our heart for what this energy of potential actually becomes. So it's less even about attraction, and it's more about what it is that we create. It's not that we're attracting those things. We're creating them. If we all feel in a post-9/11 world, if we are all conditioned to live our lives in fear, and we feel that fear every day, then it's not surprising to see very frightening things happening in the world around us all the time.
Yeah.
If, however, we can look at the things happening in the world, and we can acknowledge them, because there are, I mean, in all honesty, there are frightening things that happen. If we can observe them without internalizing them, if we can recognize and say, yes, there are frightening things, and there are some bad people in the world, but they don't have to be our frightening things. We don't have to be afraid that they're happening to us.
That's right.
There's a subtle and very powerful difference there.
There is.
Because we can recognize what's happening on the one hand without allowing it to influence the way we feel about our world.
So
we can look at the things happening and watch the 6 o'clock news, because those things, you know, the bombings and the wars, those are all part of our reality right now. But in our hearts, if we can give thanks of gratitude and appreciation for the peace that already exists, because there is already peace, we're not fooling ourselves, there is peace in our world, and if we, in some places, and if we can give thanks of gratitude and appreciation for what we already have, for the peace that already exists, for the healing and the health and the vitality that we already have in our bodies, for the abundance that already exists in our lives, what we are doing, if we can give thanks of gratitude and appreciation for those things, we're creating the blueprint so that this field of the divine matrix can give us more and more and more of those very things. It can only give us what we give it to work with. The divine matrix can only reflect back what it is that we give it to reflect. And this is where every one of us, every human listening to this broadcast, every human on the face of the earth is so important, because we're the ones that choose what this field shows us in the world. So our great challenge, our workshop, is living in a world of tremendous change and transition, where both things are happening at the same time, both the lightest of the light and the darkest of the dark. And while we can acknowledge and witness the dark and frightening things, if we can do it without identifying with them, if we can witness without claiming those to be our reality. So we can see them on the news, but in our hearts, we give thanks for the good things that we already have in our lives, and that's where we place our focus. What the experiments show, what the science demonstrates, and what the ancient tradition said, is that is how you create more of those things in your life. Because you're now, in your heart, feeling the feelings of gratitude and appreciation and peace and healing. So you're giving this field, the divine matrix, a blueprint or a template so that it can give you back precisely those things. And this is what the great masters of our past have always said to us.
Interesting,
isn't it? It's a very different way of thinking about things.
Definitely. And those are very important points. I mean, that's wonderfully put, I think. You know, it is about, in a way, you know, so just as you say, recognizing that there are bad things happening in the world, and in a way also even maybe to potentially solve a problem, or recognizing that you know, that there is you know, bad, as it were, out there, but to not get emotionally carried away with it, or implementing that, or becoming internalizing that fear in that way. And I think that is very important. Do you think
it is? You know, in the live programs, I was just in. Let's see, we were in Vienna, we were in Hamburg, we were in Frankfurt, I was in Milan. Where else was I? I was in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
We showed a live video, or a video clip, of a healing that is happening using these principles, and I think it demonstrates it beautifully. Can I talk about that briefly?
Sure, definitely. Go ahead.
It was a healing. It was filmed in a medicineless hospital in Beijing, China, and it was through an ultrasound, we were able to look into the body of a living woman who had a tumor, a cancerous tumor, that Western doctors said that they could not operate on. They couldn't do anything for her because it was too advanced.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, be comfortable until the end of your days. It was what the Western doctors said.
Mm-hmm.
She went to an alternative way of thinking about things. A medicineless clinic in China. And through the ultrasound, we can watch this tumor in her body respond while three practitioners are standing next to her using the kinds of the principles that we're talking about. They were Qigong practitioners. So they've learned to move energy in their bodies, and they've learned to focus the power of feeling in their hearts. This is the language.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were doing is they felt, these three practitioners, they felt the feeling as if the woman was already healed, as if she was fully enabled, fully capacitated. And in less than 3 minutes, in 2 minutes and 40 seconds, on the ultrasound, we watch that tumor. It begins to quiver, and it fades, and it disappears.
What?
And the woman's life has changed in less than 3 minutes.
You're kidding.
Using these principles.
And
they do this over there all the time. This is part of their belief system.
Hmm.
To them, it's not a miracle. To them, it's the way things work. And all they're doing is they are speaking the language that the field recognizes, and the field conforms to that language. And when the audiences see this, you know, to us, it looks like a miracle until we understand how it works.
Hmm.
So this is using the principle on one person.
Mm-hmm.
Then we tell about an experiment that was done in the Middle East during the Israeli-Lebanese War in the early 1980s, where people were trained to feel the feeling of peace in their hearts. It wasn't about the good guy or the bad guy, that mm-hmm. the Israelis were right or wrong, or that the Lebanese were right or wrong. They simply felt the feeling of peace. And those people were placed in the war-torn areas throughout the Middle East.
Mm.
And what happened is during the the window of time, the period of time when they felt peace, the terrorist activities all stopped completely, and the crimes against people declined, and emergency hospital room visits declined, traffic accidents declined. And when they stopped what they were doing, all those statistics reversed. And they did this again and again and again, different times of the day, different days of the month, just to make sure the effect wasn't due to a holiday or to a full moon,
mm-hmm.
or traffic a certain time of day.
Sure.
And the results were published, and I document this in the book, The Divine Matrix. It was called the International Peace Project in the Middle East. Was the name of the article. It was published in the Journal of Conflict Resolution, Volume 32, 1988, is mm-hmm. when they actually published the results.
Mm-hmm.
And what it showed scientifically is that this principle works when a certain number of people are feeling that peace in their hearts. The peace is reflected in a broad geographic area.
Mm-hmm.
So we're giving two examples here. One is in a clinic when three people are feeling as if this woman is already healed, one person's body responds, and then when many people get together using the same principle of peace, it's mirrored over a broad geographic area. Both examples are showing how our physical reality may conform to the feelings that we create in our hearts if we know the language, if we understand that it's more than a thought, and it's more than a wish. It's more than asking for help. These people weren't saying, you know, please let there be peace, or please let this woman's body heal. They weren't asking for it to happen. They were claiming that it has already happened through this language of human feeling and human emotion, the very language that was described in the books that were edited from our Western biblical texts, such as the Gospel of Thomas. One of the books, the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas, is one of the books that were edited from the Old Testament traditions that we now find in the Coptic library in Egypt, for example.
Wow, that's...
I just wanted to leave listeners with some idea. When we talk about the language, if you never hear my voice or you never read the book, I wanted to leave you with an idea of how this works. It's giving thanks of gratitude and appreciation in your heart as if your prayer has already been answered. And holding that feeling. It's not something you do for a minute and then you stop. You go about your day to the best of your ability, feeling the gratitude and appreciation for your perfect relationship, or the abundance in your life, or the healing in your loved ones, or the healing in your own body. And in that way, what the experiments show and what the ancient tradition said is that this field, this matrix, mirrors it back to us, and that's the kind of reality that we live in.
Wow, that's amazing. And you know, before we round things up here, I just wanted to ask you, do you think that this revelation, as it were, that you're sharing with us here, is this connected with the shift of the ages, or the end of time, or the end of this age?
Well, you know, that could be an entire program of itself.
That's right.
and the answer, I believe, is absolutely yes. I think what's happening is that we find ourselves now in this window of time around 2012, not, you know, maybe exactly on that date, but
sure,
we're in that range, where we have pushed the technology about as far as we can push it without destroying ourselves through the environment, through war, through the weapons, through the diseases. That's all the result of technology. So we've pushed ourselves and we've pushed technology as far as we can, and now to survive what we've created, we must come full circle and come back to bring in the spiritual principles and the holistic principles that help us to know how to use our technology.
Yeah.
So the technology isn't good, bad, right, or wrong. It's how we choose to apply it in our lives. And when we lost our spiritual whole. And this isn't about religion. It's about the holistic view that we are part of a living system that extends far beyond the surface of our planet.
Yeah.
The choices we make affect far beyond our immediate lives. That's a holistic view of the universe.
Yeah.
I think what has to happen now is to solve the problems that we've created. We've got to come full circle and come back, weaving in the ancient knowledge of our relationship to the universe with the modern technology that tells us how things work. And I believe it's very much a part of this time in history. So what I think we've done is we've set up the conditions where we must learn these things to survive what we've created.
Absolutely. And, you know, for people who are interested in knowing much more about this, how can people get a copy of your book? Tell us about that.
The Divine Matrix was actually, it was a finalist for the best new science book of 2007 at the Book Expo America in New York and Frankfurt. It's available wherever books are sold. You can buy it on Amazon.com. It's in 16 different languages and now carried in 25 countries. So you can go to our website, www.gregbraden.com, GREGGBRADEN.com. You can go to Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. In Germany, there's a publisher called Koha Verlag, and it's in the Koha catalog as well, and it's also available in English throughout Europe, so wherever books are sold.
Excellent. The website again is gregbraden.com. And Greg, I want to thank you. This has been the time has just flown by here, but I want to thank you so much for coming on. And this has been a true pleasure. And there's so much more, you know, to your research, to your, all the things that you do study and talk about. So we would love to have you back at some point if you have the time for us.
Well, Henrik, before we close our program here, I want to say thank you for being such a gracious host. And I would like to let people in your part of the world know how really fortunate and very blessed they are to have a program like yours and to have a person like you bringing this information and this very empowering way of thinking about our world to the listeners, because there are a lot of places in the world that do not have access to this kind of programming, and they would like to. So I want to thank you for your work, and I would be absolutely honored to come back on the program and... we'll just pick up where we left off and we'll do this again.
Definitely. Again, thank you so much for mentioning that, Greg, and thank you for coming on. We'll stay in contact, okay?
Okay. God bless you. God bless our listeners. Take good care.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to Red Ice Creations Radio. Do check out our website, redicecreations.com. We will be back on Sunday with Wayne Herschel, a fascinating program that you don't want to miss on Wayne's discoveries about the Forbidden Star Map and the connection to the First Degree Masonic Tracing Board and our connection to the stars. My thanks to producer Fredrik behind the controls. This is Henrik Palmgren. Until next time, take good care.